Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and Andre Kleiner just pulled up a chair. So welcome, Andre. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, good talking to you. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, I hope to get you on a regular basis. I've been kind of on your case to do that for a while because you've got a wealth of experience and also a co-author of one of the top books in our field. So I'm excited to have you as part of the show and hopefully a regular. But I just thought of your book just the other day as I got an email through LinkedIn from somebody that you may recognize their situation. I think you may have even seen it at one time or another. Is they said, I'm in a small product development manufacturing company, and I've just been assigned to be the reliability engineer. And I think they were an electrical engineer prior. But apparently he showed just a little bit too much interest in breaking things or something. I'm not sure what the criteria was, but his question was... So
he got tapped. Okay, now yeah. you are it.
That's right. You're
it. Reliability engineer.
And his question was, now what do I do? How do I get started? And so I pretty naturally thought of your book with Pat and said, you know, that's a good desk reference. You know, get a good sense of all the tools and language and so on. But that's just a bit of background reading and get started. But how would you advise this guy or when you've run into this situation, what would be like two or three things that somebody should really do or think about as they get started?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, I kept joking. I mean, I you probably heard me harping before that, we don't, basically our schools, our universities don't train enough reliability engineers. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they hardly ever train reliability engineers. I mean, University of Maryland. Yeah, I think, Fred, you have a list of schools on your website, mm-hmm. which have at least some of reliability engineering courses or training or
there's
or programs.
There's about, I think, 12, I think, worldwide that have recognized reliability engineering advanced degree programs.
Yeah.
There's not
so
many.
That's obviously not enough because pretty much every company, I mean, not every company, but most of them probably have something to do with reliability, mm-hmm. you know, things failing. So, I mean, and like I said, we kind of joke that we don't train reliability engineers, we grow them. And the situation you describe is kind of like... The two situations we can come out of it. One is when you're just the only guy there. I mean, nobody else, and that's a tough one. The easier one is like one I experienced in the past where I did not have any reliability engineering experience, but I joined the group which had people who had. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. Which one would we want to talk about?
Well, I think both are relevant. I mean, my experience was my boss came in and said, how long will this last? And so my introduction was a specific accelerated life testing. I didn't even know it was reliability engineering. But what this the question we received last week was on, I'm new to the field and they're asking me to do stuff for this product development and manufacturing program. What do I need to know? And so whether or not you're in a small group or not is, I mean...
Basically, what's your minimum body of knowledge, right?
Yeah. Well, I also pointed them to the No MTBF site and says, the first thing you do is don't use MTBF.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if people starting are ready for that kind of that message, but I think they should be down the road. But... Basically, let me give you an example. I mean, I do teach reliability. I mean, I teach at the college level occasionally, I think like you do, Fred. Mm-hmm. I teach for Purdue University, but actually it's not a reliability course. It's systems engineering,
right.
Which does have few lectures on reliability. And I teach some internal and external seminars. And one of my first slides is basically, okay, what is there's a reliability definition, but also the slide saying, okay, reliability engineering basically has two integral disciplines in it, and one is it's you can call it statistics, or I sometimes use the term actuarial reliability, mm-hmm. Where you deal with statistics and sample sizes and maybe Weibull analysis if our listeners heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is physics of failure, where you actually kind of look and study. And I think both of them really important. You can't say, oh, this is better than one better than the other or more important. Even though sometimes I joke that in reliability engineering, physics always trumps mathematics. Meaning that sometimes we jump to doing statistics too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And before understanding, okay, what is really failing. But like I said, those two parts are equal and equally important.
Well, that makes sense to me. Some of what we deal with is parts and products and processes that have variability in it. And statistics is the language of that variability. And whether we're talking about stress strength curves or time to failure distributions, statistics is a pretty handy tool to describe that variability. But I also agree that the physics of failure, in its broadest sense, not defined to just a specific model or something like that, but understanding failure mechanisms. Is this an abrasive wear, or is it a corrosion, or is it a corrosion that has to have, you know, various elements before it occurs, or understanding things at that fundamental level rather than at a black box level are pretty important. But you just described in two areas of reliability that you could spend 5 years coming up to speed on. And it takes a lot of experience sometimes to know how to use these tools.
So basically, what's the quickest path?
Yeah. Well, where do you get started? Get a good statistics book and go to University of Maryland at Cal's and read all their papers? And, you know, I don't think that's a good start. How do we get somebody going?
Well, I mean, thanks for mentioning the book I co-wrote with Patrick O'Connor. I think that's a good start. But again, if you're trying to come up to speed as fast as possible, I think on the physics of failure, you probably need to look at, okay, what type of products I'm working mm-hmm. with. And like if it's electronics, obviously the electronic products will have totally different type of failure modes and failure mechanism. I wouldn't say totally different, but different.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're working with mechanical systems, you need to look at those and kind of dig a little deeper. And clearly, fatigue is probably present in any type of products you're dealing with, and fatigue, both like low cycle fatigue, which is usually caused by temperature cycling, and high cycle fatigue, vibration.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I would say those two would be kind of cornerstones of physics of failure, and that's where you start and keep digging, getting into humidity. You can dig into like effect of a constant temperature and so on. I think so. Those things would be extremely important. And on statistics side, I mean, I would say, yeah, you look at basic statistical distributions and probably Weibull analysis, which is technically a life data analysis. We like to use the term Weibull analysis.
Right. Yeah. And that's probably where I started. Well, I know it started as I had all this data. I had a bunch of previous products that were tested, and they had some field data, and I was just trying to get a handle on what it meant and how to describe its behavior over time. So I basically started, though, with a set of particular questions. In my case, my boss said, hey, you need to figure out an accelerated test for this particular product. And so I stepped out and found a seminar, actually it was in Boston, on life data analysis. And I went to a conference that was on the subject, and Rams conference, where we had a chance to sit down and talk last time in late January. If that works into your schedule, it's great bunch of tutorials and papers and people like us.
And the webinars and something we did not have even 10 years ago, mm-hmm. which we have plenty of. And I know you, Fred, have running webinars from Ascendo Reliability, mm-hmm. and we also have ASQ Reliability Division, mm-hmm. which does webinars pretty often. And those are free webinars. I think those are very, very helpful.
So getting back to, all of these things are ways to learn, whether it's books or webinars, conferences, and so on. But I think a fundamental way to start, and it, building on what you said, Andre, about stats and physics of failure, is, well, what are you trying to achieve? You know, if you're designing a product, it may have a goal. And if it doesn't, then, well, how good does it need to be? And how reliable do you want it to be? And is there information related to that? And then where are you right now? How are you going to measure your current system and estimate it in some way to find out if you're on track or not? And so those two tasks can get you started to understand where you need to focus. So like you said, if it's an electromechanical system, it's two different sets of disciplines for failure analysis and physics of failure type work. But if my mechanical system is pretty solid and it's not causing problems, and the mechanical engineers understand the failure mechanisms and it's going to last plenty long, then we may spend more time working on learning derating techniques and electronics testing and electronics physics of failure models. Or vice versa, depending on what's our current status. Learning everything in reliability engineering could be a lifetime pursuit.
I was going to say, we're trying to kind of cover that in, 15 minutes, what needs to be understood. But it is a career, and it's for many of us, it's basically a lifelong career in reliability engineering. So, but again, I think depending on where you're starting, your priorities may be different. And like you mentioned, okay, what do we understand? What is reliability? I mean, how we define what means reliable product, mm-hmm. and what is not. And I know you like that topic. But again, where you start, like I work in the automotive industry, and some of our customers, for example, they give us pretty complete specifications, mm-hmm. explaining what they want. We call those mature customers.
Right.
But with others, they don't. So that's where we need to come up with, okay, what kind of reliability goals we're dealing with, what goals we need to achieve, and all that stuff. So it's probably, we won't be able to come up with a cookie cutter kind of approach. So depending what industry you're in and what's available, I think, your first step will vary based on those things.
Well, that's a good point. And I know Adam and I have talked about this a number of times, and I think Carl and I even talked about it a couple of times, is that there isn't a one set of activities that then creates a reliable product. It's understand how good it needs to be, what the risks are, what's the areas that either you don't have enough information or the product's not good enough yet. And then it's a lot of different engineering. And it's probably my favorite part of reliability engineering, is that sometimes we're material scientists and sometimes we're working with suppliers and vendors very closely to understand their process and capabilities. And sometimes we're modifying designs with the mechanical engineer to get some stability or minimize some harmonic damaging vibration.
Program managers where we need to basically kind of schedule a test plan, mm-hmm. schedule the testing according to a test plan. You need to schedule equipment like chambers, shakers, and all that stuff. So yeah, it's pretty multifaceted kind of activity being a reliability engineer.
Well, have you heard the fable or the story about how to eat an elephant?
Starting
Yeah, it's one bite at a time. And I think that's how you get started with reliability is what are the pressing questions? You know, what is your program team or your situation currently and what decisions are coming up? And then how could reliability information help that, help the team make better decisions? And that might be where you actually start is, well, where can you be most useful, more add value to the process? And then it's one step at a time as you start mastering these different tools and techniques and the language of reliability. So all those training opportunities can just supplement what you need to know.
And also probably what we need to mention is ASQ CRE, Certified Reliability Engineer mm-hmm. exam. I think I've taught this class a few times, and sometimes it's a pretty big body of knowledge. And when I am trying to kind of convince people that it would be a good thing to get CRE, often people answer, "Oh, I looked through the body of knowledge, and not everything applies to me." And my answer is probably there's no job where like 100% of that applies to you, but still you'll find if you're in reliability engineering role, then you'll probably find at least half of what's in there be useful to you one way or the other.
Oh, definitely. It's a huge body of knowledge, but the way we often work is we need to understand the business elements and business systems. We need to understand manufacturing and operations. We need to understand supplier negotiations and contracts and motivations. It's way more than just run down to the lab and break things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Now, I'm not sure if we settled on a set of like core things that somebody gets started. But it really is just one step at a time and solve problems as you go, add value as you go. Your book, Andre, we'll put a link to that in the show notes, is make sure people can find it, is because it's a pretty decent handbook. It covers a lot of the basic tools and some of the advanced tools and dive into it as needed. But as you're going through the process and just getting started, the webinars and courses and conferences and so on are great tools, but also the discussion forums and comments on Ascendo Reliability. It's a great way for you to ask questions and get some pointers or tips. So I think the number one way to get started is continue to ask questions. You know, look for support. It'd probably be the easiest way. So let's wrap it up here, Andre, and we'll come back and see if this sparks at least some discussion with the listeners to see if this is helpful or if they have other advice.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. So really appreciate everybody listening. And if, like we just alluded to, is if you do have more questions, and we are encouraging you to have questions, let us know. Give us a comment or a review on iTunes or on your player of interest, or get on the Ascendo Reliability site or say the ASQ discussion forum on LinkedIn, and fire away. There's a lot to learn and there's a lot of people that are willing to help you. So we look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.